to be standing before you this evening. When I envisioned speaking, it was probably going to be a little more people than tonight, but it doesn't matter. It's no more important, or it's no less terrifying to stand up and talk in front of people than it's on. It is on. Got a light on. So, what I always try to do when I speak, the once a year I'm scheduled to speak in front of the group, I always try to leave you. Oh, it is? Okay. I don't think I'll need it.
You go for that recorder.
Oh, that's fine. I'm going to go ahead and start. You guys can tell them what a great beginning it was. But whenever I speak, I always try to leave the group that I'm speaking to with one or two points that they can take, and maybe a week from now or 2 weeks from now, they'll think, oh, that's what Scott was talking about, or I do see that in my life. So hopefully tonight's lesson will be the same way for you. Hopefully you'll gain one or two things out of it that you can take with you, and it will help in your walk. But the question I'm going to keep coming back to tonight is, what is your plan? And okay, I've got this figured out now. Most of us, when we're young, 5 years old, we had a plan. We're going to go to kindergarten. And then we're going to learn how to ride our bike is another one that you could take. Or when you turn 16, you're going to get your driver's license. Or when you turn 18, you're going to go to college. Or you're going to move out of the house. Or you're going to travel the world. Or you're going to get a job. Or you're going to get married. Or you're going to have kids, etc. Those are all some of the plans that we make in our own little life, that what we want to get accomplished. But how many of you on your 18th birthday said, on January 13th, 2019, I'm going to be sitting in Glen Burnie, Maryland, listening to Scott Jeffrey speak? None of us had that as our plan, did we?
Thank
you. Oh, it's green now, so that's a good thing. So, that's kind of what I want to talk about tonight. And I had a conversation a while back with, since he's not here, I'll mention his name, Kwaku. And we were talking, and he was talking about a question. He asked, why am I me personally? Why am I here? Why am I in Glen Burnie? And what is God's plan for my life? And I've asked a lot of other people that question, and it's a lot more fun to ask that question than have to answer that question. Because maybe you don't want to be at a certain place at a given time in your life, or maybe you just don't want to answer that question. But it's a valid question to continue to ask ourselves, is what is God's plan for your life? Or what are you doing? What are you doing here, or wherever here is, at that precious time, at that moment? And that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. Is what is God's plan for you? Deb and I, what started me down this path was, Deb and I were on vacation in Naples, Florida. And the church we went to in Naples had a visiting preacher there that was just turning 70 years old. And him and his wife were touring the United States, going to all the churches where he had been a preacher through the years. And he had written his memoirs, which is over 26,000 words. And it was based on his life story. And it was fascinating to hear him talk. And it resonated as being true, truthful, and authentic, because the people he was talking to, a lot of them in that audience had lived through what he was talking about. So you could look over the other places he'd gone. I'm sure he was teaching the same message, but it was important what he had to say. And some of the things that struck me about his life was, when he was little, 2-3 years old, his mom would write his name, Paul Jarrett, evangelist. And his dad and his granddad were both gospel preachers for over 50 years apiece. So his heritage of his family was to go to church, and that's the role models he had. He said that his dad the biggest lessons his dad ever taught him were not his words, but his life. And he would ride in the back seat going to gospel meetings with his dad, and just everywhere he went with his dad, and the lessons that he listened to. Those were all things that molded his life, but things that not necessarily he hadn't planned to do. But Paul led a very common life. These were his words. He was not spectacular in any way. And he said that in the most humble way possible. He wasn't a great orator. He wasn't real tall. He wasn't great looking. He wasn't any of those things that you might expect a guy that wanted to go into preaching. They might have some of these attributes, but he was as common as you could possibly get. And that's kind of the strength of what I'm going to get to when we're talking about this. He didn't have any of the magical skills. He wasn't Zig Ziglar by any stretch of the imagination or any other great talker that you want to talk about. But one verse he used once was Jeremiah chapter 18, verses 1 through 10. And it says, this is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Go down to the potter's house, and there I will give you my message. So I went down to the potter's house, and I saw him working at the wheel. But the pot he was shaping from the clay was marred in his hands. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as seemed best to him. Then the word of the Lord came to me. He said, "Can I not do with you, Israel, as this potter does, declared the Lord? Like clay in the hand of the potter, so are you in my hand." And that's the verse he used to really tell us how his life was shaped, and the way he really viewed it is God used him throughout his life as he saw necessary. And that's what we're going to keep coming back to. I also want to look at another verse I thought of is 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And starting with verse 7, it says, "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not driven to despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always carrying in the body the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifest in our bodies. For we who live are always being given over to death for Jesus' sake, so that the life of Jesus also may be manifested in our mortal flesh." So one thing that as I listen to Paul and as I think about my life, God could have used any vehicle he wanted to spread his word. And yet he chose us, knowing how frail we were, knowing how many flaws we've got. But he used us, and that's kind of the strength of who God is, that if it's not us individually, collectively, or his message is going to get spread through us. And even though we're jars of clay and we're fragile, we can be molded into what we need to be. And that's kind of what Paul talked about and what I'm going to get, we'll talk about here. But as I get into his life just a little bit, I'm not going to speak forever on this, but Paul's goal for himself was to be a history teacher. He didn't even want to be a preacher. He was going to run track at a big college. Those were his goals when he was young. But realistically, what really happened was doors were open for him to go to a real small Bible college in West Virginia. He got hurt, so he never even did get to run track. But the very first Sunday he was in that little college town, his uncle was going to the church where he went and asked him to preach that morning. And he'd never even preached before. But the one thing he was willing to do was that he was willing to preach. He was willing to, his uncle asked him to do it, and out of respect to his uncle, he goes, "I'll try this. I've never done it before." And so you'll see on through the many things he accomplished, that was always his attitude. "I'll try it. I'll do the best I can." And so even he, looking back at his life, he just shook his head. He goes, "I don't know how I got here, but I did." And as I look back at my life, I see the role God had in my life. And so that's part of it. He met his wife there. He didn't intend to meet his wife there, but he did. She didn't intend to marry a preacher, but she did. And she supported him through his 50-year career being a preacher, a gospel preacher. Kind of a recap of his ministry, just some of the firsts that he had to, he moved around a lot, from little towns in Ohio and West Virginia and North Carolina and Florida. All these different places he went to one after another, and they would pick up and move, moving farther away from their families every time. He had many firsts. He had to do his first weddings, funerals, marriage counseling, divorces he had to go through, baptisms, which were positive. He had to work with members and elders that had agendas that he had to overcome or work around or work with. And there was one particular ill-tempered brother, as he called him, and he called him by name, that even though it was 30 years ago, the anger, not anger, but the pain and the frustration of having to deal with that person, he still thought about him, and he learned lessons from him, but he still had to deal with him. He participated in a debate, and he said, looking back, it was probably a mistake to be in a public debate, but I learned from it. He was fired numerous times for some of the views that he spoke about. He started writing columns and Bible materials just because somebody asked him to write a simple column. And he started writing them, and he got more and more in depth. And so he's been writing columns and books for 50 years. And he, a quote that he gave is that God's will is not what happens, but how you react to it. And I've heard that quote many other ways, but it's very true. It's the more we can keep our minds open and keep a positive attitude, the more we can do positive things for God. And that's kind of what he was trying to talk about. And as I listened to him speak, and then afterwards I asked him for his memoirs, and it was 26,000 words, I think it was. But I've read it numerous times, but the things I gained from it was that I've thought of three people in the Bible that I want to relate to what I learned from Paul, this preacher. And one is Joseph. And when I was reading some commentaries on Joseph, this one stuck to me. It said there was a purity and an elevation of spirit in Joseph that stood out in welcome contrast to the coarse brutality and impurity of others. And I would love for somebody to say that about me. But if you think about Joseph, and we're going to touch on his life a little bit, think about all the obstacles he overcame that weren't in his plan, and what a positive attitude he had, and that he always worked for God. But let's turn, or if you just want to read, because I think we're close enough, maybe we can see it, from Joseph, from Genesis chapter 37. It said, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. And I'm going to go to verse 3. So now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all of his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. And then I want to move down to verse 11. And it said, and his brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the sayings in mind. So Joseph interpreted dreams, and God gave him that ability. And he just blindly did it, and really didn't even put much thought into the ramifications of what would happen when he told these dreams. In a lot of cases, it got him in trouble, but he was willing to do it because he knew it was the right thing to do. And then verse 36, and then his brothers, ultimately, we know, sold him into slavery. And verse 27 says, come, let us sell him to the Ishmaelites. I meant to practice that word, and I didn't. And let not our hand be upon us, for he is our brother, our own flesh. And then verse 36 says, meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him to Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. So he finds himself through, I would say, no fault of his own, but it certainly wasn't his plan. He's gone from being with his brother and a family that his dad loved him to now he's in a faraway country working for Potiphar. And then we'll go quickly talking about Potiphar's wife. And we're not going to read all these verses, but from chapter 39, verse 2, it says, the Lord was with Joseph and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of the Egyptian master. And then verse 21 says, but the Lord was with Joseph once again and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. So no matter what situation he was in, God was with him. And I think it's a great lesson for us. If we keep a positive attitude and we just do the very best we can, I think this is a great example. And I've used it. And I'll tell you a little bit about me, where I've used it in a second. But it's just so meaningful is that God watches out for us and doesn't forget us. And Joseph needed help. He needed God, and God was there for him. And then when Joseph rose to power, so he'd been in prison, he'd interpreted the dreams. And let me go back one verse. Okay, and the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge. And that happened with Potiphar, and then it happened with the keeper of the prison, and then it also happened with the king, with the Pharaoh, is that they had so much confidence in Joseph that everything that they gave him, they didn't even give it a second thought because it was because of God's power and God's enriching what he did. But I want to look at verse 5 here. It's from chapter 45, and it says, now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. And that's when Joseph was talking to his brothers. And it would have been so easy for us, for anybody, for Joseph or anybody else, to have been through what he had to go through because of his brothers. Think about how angry you might be if you weren't well grounded and your faith wasn't sufficient. But to me, I take this Joseph and I take everything he did and I take how he reacted. And that's the role model that I try to emulate in my life. Is that no matter what happens, use it to, like Joseph did, God provided this for me, or God gave me the strength to do this. Always give him the credit, and we're going to be much better off. So then, the next person I want to talk about briefly is Esther. And I love this story just like I love Joseph, and I kept getting entrenched in it, and I could talk the whole lesson on any of these three people. But Esther, I just like, if you look at the totalness of her life, and just, she was good. And she always stood out as being good and blessed by God. You could just, everything she did. And verse 2, it says, the king loved Esther more than all of the women. She had won grace and favor in his sight more than all of the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And if I look down at verse chapter 4 and verse 16, it says, go gather all the Jews to be found in Shura and hold a fast on my behalf, and do not eat or drink for 3 days or nights. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though is it against the law, and if I perish, I perish. I love that attitude, and I love that verse, because no matter what happened to her, she was going to do the right thing. And her uncle, Mordecai, had explained to her what was going to happen and how much trouble they were in. And so she, at great peril to herself, went in and did the right thing, and she was blessed because of it, and so was her uncle. So I love that verse. And when I think of Esther, I think of that verse. And when I'm in similar situations, I just try to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do and everything's going to turn out okay, no matter what that is. It's not always going to turn out the way you want it to, but it's going to, if you keep confidence, it's going to turn out okay. And that's what I wanted to talk about with her. And then I didn't put it up on the board, but oops, I'm sorry. Okay. And then my last one that I want to talk about is Ruth. And I threw in here, and Naomi as well. But Ruth is the one I really want to talk about. And Ruth chapter 1, verse 15, and she said, "See, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law." But Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." And think about back in this day, Naomi had, or Ruth, either one, they'd lost their husbands. The law, they were invisible to the law, and they could have easily starved to death. It would have been so much safer for Ruth to go back to, and be with her people and find a new husband, and she would have been all right, but she didn't want to leave Naomi. Because she wanted to do the right thing to do, because it was the right thing to do. Now, and she's a lot like Esther, and she's a lot like Joseph. It's the same thing, I think, in all three people, all three situations. And I love that verse, and I'll read it one more time. Well, I'll read it in just a second because I have a slide coming up. "And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more." And I love the fact that Naomi knew what she was asking. She wanted her to go back. She didn't want her to be at peril like she was. But Ruth would have none of it. She was going to stay with her no matter what. And then we move farther. Chapter 2, verse 11, it says, "But Boaz answered her, 'All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repays you for what you have done, and a full reward has been given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge.'" And then verse 3, verse 10, "And he said, 'May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made the last kindness greater than the first, and that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman.'" And this is a great example. You just don't know what other people, how they're viewing what you're doing. And most of them that have any sort of interaction with you, they know you're a Christian. They know you claim to be. And bad things might happen to you, but they look to see how you react and what you do. And so you're an example to people that you don't even realize you're an example to. And I think that's another great point from Ruth and Naomi both. Is that we can just be an example in everyday situations and we might not always realize it. This is kind of a fun little slide that I put up here. But last summer, I was on a group ride with my friends. And I got stranded on the side of the road on I-70. And it was getting dark and the trucks were whipping by and it was dangerous. And I told everybody else to leave. I said, "Hey, I've got a tow truck coming. Don't worry about it. I want you guys to get home." And this guy in this picture here, he looked kind of gruff, but he's this teddy bear of a guy. And he basically said, "I will leave when you leave. Don't ask me again." And I told him, I went back to Ruth verses 1:17 and I shared that verse with him. And I said, he reminded me of that verse. And I said, "I really appreciate what you've done." And he went home and read that verse and he was impressed by it. And it just, you just never know where a situation in life's going to come up when you can share some of these examples. And that was his example. He was not about to leave me until I got on that truck and got safe, just like he did. So, the abridged version of my lesson, I will go to my conclusion. And what I learned from my study here is that it's very easy to think that we are in total control of our life, that we can map out a plan from day one and it's going to work out exactly like we think it's going to work out. You've heard people say before, "I'm a self-made man," or I've wanted to be a football player since I was 2 years old, or "I want to be a millionaire by the time I'm 30. Lots of people have these grandiose plans, and sometimes they work out and sometimes they don't. But whether they do or not, it's important for us to realize, like the preacher Paul that I talked about at the beginning, when he looked back at his life, how it had transpired, he counseled us to not worry, but to realize who our Father is. There's a Facebook quote that I found that said, "Not once does it say worry about it, stress over it, or figure it out. But over and over it clearly says trust God." And that's what I want us to talk about. That's what I want us to think about tonight. Joseph excelled wherever he found himself and gave all the credit. Esther was busy doing what was right, and God protected her and helped her to prosper. Ruth and Naomi had a faith and strong character that saw them through many hard times, that and others recognized what they did. And the last thing I want to show you, and this came from my daughter's car. I went to fill it up with gas, and I was in the process of writing my sermon, and it's perfect. And it's how she lives her life. But basically, bloom where you are planted. I could have saved you guys 25 minutes and just showed this slide. But basically, that's what I want to leave us with today. And I gave us three examples that we all know already, but Esther and Naomi and Ruth and Joseph, they bloomed where they were planted. God's given us those examples, and that's what he expects of us. No matter where we're at, no matter what we're up against, we need to bloom where we're planted. So tonight, I think everyone here is Christians, but if you're not or you need the help of any of us, we hope that you will come forward. And I hope that you'll reflect on this lesson and hopefully that we are like the examples I gave tonight. But if we can help you in any way tonight, please come forward as we stand and sing.